Well, it's been more than 20 years since the downfall of Suharto, and during that period, Indonesia has been widely viewed as a model, moderate, democratic, Muslim-majority society. But are we witnessing Jakarta's tilt towards a more conservative, even fundamentalist Islam? After all, it's widely anticipated that Indonesia's next vice president is a Muslim cleric known for curbing religious freedoms and opposing gay rights. Meanwhile, Islamic schools are expanding. Conservatives have tried to ban alcohol and sex between unmarried people. Headscarves for women, once rare, are now widely worn. So, should we be worried about the state of Indonesia's relatively young, tolerant democracy? Well, for answers, let's turn to our next panel. Greg Feely is Associate Professor and Senior Fellow of Indonesian Politics at ANU's Bell School of Asia-Pacific Affairs. He joins us from our Parliament House studios. And Greg Earle is a columnist with the Lowy Institute's Interpreter. He's also the editor of the Asia Society's Asia Briefing. Now, I've just been chatting with another Greg Sheridan, about China. It's a Greg-a-thon here at RN. Greg Feely, Greg Earle, welcome back to Between the Lines.
Thank you, Tom. Pleasure.
Greg Feely, let's start with you. Heading into the April general election, what is Joko Widodo's biggest vulnerability?
There are a couple of really big ones for him. The economy is one of them. If interest rates go up, well, then history tells us, recent history tells us, that the popularity of the president goes down. This happened to SBY, happened before him, and it's a possibility for Jokowi as well. But we're 3 months out from the election. The economy is ticking over reasonably well, so I don't think he would be too concerned on that front. The second issue for him is Islam. He's always been vulnerable to attack from Islamists who regard him as something of a henchman for both non-Muslims and foreign forces. Much like a lot of Republicans have an almost visceral dislike for Hillary Clinton, Islamists have a similar kind of attitude towards Jokowi. They simply can't abide him. And so there's about 30 to 40% of the electorate who are of that view. What would be a problem for Jokowi is if there was any kind of Islamic issue that would emerge that might have a galvanising effect on people in the middle of the spectrum, the people outside that 30 or 40% that might suddenly make them think, in fact, he's not a good Muslim. Most Muslims, by the way, do say that they regard him as a more strongly Islamic candidate than they do his rival, Prabowo Subianto.
Okay, now that brings us to the running mate of President Joko Widodo, and he's likely to become Indonesia's vice president at the election. I'm talking about Ma'ruf Amin. He's a 75-year-old Muslim cleric. Greg Feely.
Yes, I've known him for 25 years and watched his career. And he's both an Islamic scholar and ulama, but he's also very much a politician and a practical politician at that. He's built his career in public life for being able to do deals, to work out what's the best way to establish patronage networks, to lock people into your support base. That's a kind of can-do person he is.
He's criticised the Miss Universe pageant swimsuit contest as pornography. I'm getting this from the Wall Street Journal. His council has issued fatwas against interfaith marriage. And when he became head of the Indonesian Ulema Council, that's Indonesia's leading authority on Islam, he issued a fatwa criminalising lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender activity. This guy sounds like a fundamentalist, Greg.
He certainly can be. That's one of the guises that he has. And indeed, for the last 20 years or so, that's been really the public face of Ma'ruf Amin. And I think he is an inherently conservative man. He's not always as puritanical as some of those decisions would suggest. So when he's in different settings, he behaves in a different way. So you're quite right to point to his role in the National Ulama Council, where he has been responsible for a lot of anti-gay, a lot of anti-Shia, Ahmadiyya rhetoric and rulings, which have done a great deal of harm.
Okay, well, what about the running mate for the other presidential candidate, Prabowo, Greg Earle?
Well, I think this is one of the really interesting things about this election. The new interesting face in the election is Santiago Uno, who's a 49-year-old businessman who's the running mate of Prabowo Subianto. He's proving quite a dynamic figure. He was perhaps the most dynamic figure in the election, the first election debate a week or so ago. He's going out on the election campaign trail, doing the sort of things that Jokowi used to do when he was the front runner in the election when he was running for president, meeting people. I think he appeals to young people. I think he's the face of the future.
Santiago Uno, Greg Feely, is that right? Is he the face of the future?
I think he is. He's not the only face of the future. most Indonesian political observers and indeed political actors believe that Jokowi will win the election on the 17th of April this year. And so the real focus then turns to 2024 when the next election will be held. And it's people like Santiago. There's a whole lot of characters like him who are younger, more dynamic, have cut their teeth in local leadership roles and are ready for the next step. And so that will be quite an exciting regeneration of Indonesian politics, but we're going to have to wait 4 or 5 years to see it develop.
What about Joko Widodo's controversial attempt to release the jailed cleric Aku Bashir? This is the Bali bomber's so-called spiritual leader. Has that backfired?
Well, it has. I think what you're seeing there is a case of election campaign daily tactics sort of triumphing a long-term careful strategy. But I think, on the other hand, it also shows that deep within the Indonesian system and within Jokowi's government, there are people who are really inclined to keep a lid on Islamic fanaticism and Abu Bakar Bashir's organisation. And so there's been such a backlash against it that it's now under review, and you know, it seems as though that's not going to go ahead.
And let's remember the October 2002 Bali bombings killed more than 200 people, including 88 Australians. If you just tuned in, you're on RN. I'm Tom Switzer. My guests are Professor Greg Feely from the Australian National University and Greg Earle. He's a former AFR correspondent in Jakarta. We're talking about the Indonesian elections in April. Now, about half of Indonesia's, what is it, about 265 million people, they're younger than 30, extraordinary. Greg Feely, to what extent do they subscribe to a more conservative interpretation of Islam?
I think it's a divided, so that's a large group of people, many tens of millions of people, and they fit across a religious and political spectrum. So there are certainly, there's a rising trend of Puritanism amongst many in that millennial group. The way they consume religion is much more conservative than what their parents have been. They're the sorts of people who wear extremely modest clothing, who disapprove of homosexuality and the like. But however, if we look more closely at those people as individuals, we often find that their private lives are still actually quite cosmopolitan. And so things are not quite as they seem when we look at the reporting in newspapers, when we look at surveys, when we go to people's houses, when we talk to them about what kinds of things they do in their private time, what kind of personal relations they have, sexual relations they have, often we find it's a far more complex picture. But nonetheless, overall, the trend is towards conservatism.
Greg Earle.
Well, I'd agree with that. I think just because people are publicly manifesting themselves as more Islamic doesn't mean they're fanatic. And I think this sort of trend that you're seeing in Indonesia has been played out in other societies. It's not a pure, uniquely Indonesian one. Even in Western societies, in some Western societies, young people are becoming more Christian in some places. So I think as in complex societies, people look back to their traditions and old cultures, sometimes cherry-pick aspects of them, and sort of return to them.
Okay, so the consensus here is that we shouldn't really be alarmed by these developments in Indonesia. Greg Feely, what are the implications here for our relationship with Jakarta over the next 5 years?
Well, I think one of the things to emphasise is that both of the leading the presidential candidates are not particularly Islamic figures, even though they go to a lot of trouble to court the Islamic vote. And if Islam was on a kind of fundamentalist surge in Indonesia, you would see the presidential candidates, not the vice presidential candidates, but the presidential candidates having that kind of Islamic flavour, and they don't. Nonetheless, for a country like Australia, we have to factor Islamic elements more into our diplomacy, and we have to be more mindful of those things when we're dealing with Indonesia.
And all this, Greg Earle, as Washington seeks closer security ties with Jakarta in the face of a growing China.
Yes, well, I think Indonesia, like Australia, finds itself really caught between China and the US. But I think perhaps unlike Australia, it's going to really steadfastly try and maintain a more neutral position between those two countries. And so I think you're going to see whoever comes to power in Indonesia, and it seems like it's going to be Jokowi, that they will continue to sort of play that role as a balancing force between those two countries and will constantly be sort of playing them off.
And finally, Gregor, am I right in saying that these Indonesian elections are happening at the same time as the Indian elections? What does that tell you?
Well, I think this is one of the things that's really being missed at the moment, this year ahead in Asia, that these two countries are both voting at the same time. That's 1 billion people voting, probably about a 70% turnout in both countries. That's far more people than vote in the US election. So this is really a festival of Asian democracy. There's authoritarian and intolerant religious trends in both countries, but the people seem to like voting, and I think that's something that's very positive about this year.
A very positive thing amid all the negative things in the world this year. Greg Feely, your sense too?
Yes, very much. I think there's actually a lot to celebrate. There's illiberal aspects to democracy in our region, but the fact that these two very large countries in our neighbourhood have largely successful democracies is something to celebrate.
Gentlemen, wonderful program to be continued. Thanks so much for being on Between the Lines.